Hi, everybody. Welcome to Geraldo, the podcast. I'm Geraldo Rivera. Thank you very much for tuning in. Beginning today, I'm going to be doing this twice a week, rambling on and giving you my take on issues large and small. If you want to know what I'll be talking about, if you've had the opportunity to check out my Facebook and Twitter accounts, you can see that if I've got anything, it's opinions about what's going on. And since last November the 8th, and especially since his inauguration on January 20th, our 45th president and his opponents have certainly been providing us plenty to talk about. In terms of my political ideology, I'm kind of hard to buttonhole. I'm a radical moderate. I like to say that I'm not red, I'm not blue, I'm red, white, and blue. My Twitter bio is as close as you can get to summing up who I think of Geraldo, who I think I am. Loving husband and dad, loyal friend, fierce enemy, patriot, kick-ass reporter, and proud Jew-Rican. I'm half Jewish, half Puerto Rican, and I think I'm really 100% of both of those. I like to say that I'm a pragmatic idealist. I want everyone to have a good life. I want government to help folks get a fair shake. But I want people to be responsible for themselves and for their families, responsible for their own actions. Good intentions do not put food on the table. You've got to work for it. You've got to be in charge of your own skin. You've got to help the people that you love. You've got to help society. Be a net plus. I'm not asking you to go out and gather alms for the poor, but I like people that have a good conscience. I like people who work for a living. I like people who help other people. So thanks. Here is episode one of Geraldo, the podcast. Hi, this is Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. My wife, Erica, and I and our three girls went to South Africa on safari at the Malala Game Preserve over the Christmas holidays. It was our daughter, Sol, the 11-year-old's first safari. It brought up memories of past African adventures, both as a family and me as a war correspondent. I covered the fighting in Libya and in Somalia and other trouble spots over the years. A wonderful time this time was had by all. On the way home after stopping in Amsterdam, Holland, to visit Desmond. Desmond is the firstborn son of my firstborn son, Gabriel, and his wife, Deb. We, the family, got home to an uneasy America, about to give a decidedly mixed welcome to President-elect Donald Trump, the longest of long-shot chief executives. I've known Donald Trump for over four decades. We met way back in 1976. In many ways, our lives have been parallel. Of course, he's been a lot more famous and a lot richer than I've been, but we have known each other and dipped in and out of each other's lives from time to time. I've interviewed him a million times over the years. His election to the presidency and this transition has been, to say the least, tumultuous. And part of the tumult are these sharp charges that Mr. Trump's presidency is illegitimate. Now, aside from the fact that he lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton, who garnered almost 2.9 million more votes than Donald did, my friend was being tarred by serial scandals. One of the scandals, as you know, included the Russian-sponsored hacking of Democratic Party operatives and the inference that the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, had poisoned the minds of American voters with damaging leaks about Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. The hard left has been having a field day alluding to the Manchurian candidate-elect, who is, in their mind, a stooge for the wily Kremlin boss. And adding to the toxic atmosphere surrounding Mr. Trump's ascendancy to the White House were the actions of our own FBI director, James Comey. Now, Comey was just as bad as Vladimir Putin. Comey destroyed Hillary's momentum, as you recall, in the last week and a half of the campaign with that bogus story of ultimately non-existent emails. There were also salacious and almost surely false and slanderous allegations being bantied around when I got home from Africa of alleged shenanigans by Mr. Trump and or his staffers in 2013 in a Moscow hotel room with prostitutes and so forth. But true or false, and they are almost certainly false, all of this conspired to make Mr. Trump the most unpopular president-elect in the history of polling. This is all leading up to his inauguration on January 20th. As Trump carried on prior to that with his gritty transition, he did something shortly after our arrival home in New York that, despite everything else going on, stirred optimism in my heart, and it made me say, see, that's the guy that I know. On the night of January 2nd, 2017, with Congress officially out of session, the GOP leaders, McCarthy and Ryan and so on, voted virtually in secret to disembowel the Congressional Ethics Office. Some of those voting to dismember the Ethics Office had been investigated and punished by that very office for ethical lapses. It was really a low-down and dirty thing for them to try to do. President-elect Trump, though, would not hear from it. He would not hear of it. He let congressional Republican leaders know that he was opposed to the underhanded move and it just would not stand. The next morning, hearing Trump respond that way and warn the Republicans not to go ahead with the dismemberment of the Ethics Office, I tweeted twice on January 3rd. First, I tweeted, nice move by POTUS, President-elect of the United States Trump, putting Republican lawmakers in their place for attempting to weaken ethics laws. Strong, significant signal. And then later in the day, I tweeted, GOP is about to find out who is in charge. Hint, it ain't them. And it won't be business as usual. It's POTUS 45. Drain the swamp. I tweeted, quoting the Trump slogan, drain the swamp in Washington. On January 12th, 8 days before the inauguration, I got an email from Mr. Trump's assistant, Meredith McElver, who copied both of my tweets. Scrawled across the copy of my two tweets was a handwritten note from Mr. Trump. Geraldo, miss you. Thanks. Donald. Now, I'd been worried that my opposition to Mr. Trump's policies on everything from Mexican immigration to Muslims to former POW Senator John McCain's service had soured our friendship, the friendship between me and Donald Trump. So I was delighted to hear from him. I immediately emailed Meredith, the assistant of Mr. Trump, back, telling her that I was honored and asking her if I could stop by to say hello before Mr. Trump left for Washington and the grand, controversial, contested inauguration. Meredith wrote me back right away, quote, he asks if you are here now. Can you come up? Let us know your schedule. He's here Tuesday, Wednesday, next week as well. That's this week, end quote. So I was just glad that I had shaved off this scrawny vacation beard that I had grown in Africa and Holland. At 4 o'clock on the afternoon of January 12th, I was escorted up the gilded elevator at Trump Tower. The press was waiting there in the lobby. They photographed me going in. I was escorted up the elevator to his transition office. I cleared Secret Service and all the rest of that. Said hello, had a nice chat with his longtime security guys, who I've known for a long time. So after waiting just for a few minutes, Mr. Trump and First Lady-elect Melania came out. They had been meeting with the Missouri Senator, Roy Blunt, and his wife. And so I was escorted in. As he was leaving, though, Senator Blunt of Missouri was very helpful. He pointed out that it was me who had predicted earliest on that Mr. Trump would be the eventual GOP nominee. I was just grateful. I'm just grateful that no one asked or mentioned who I voted for in the general election, because that would have been awkward. So as the Missourians left, Melania lingered to ask by name how Erica and Sol were doing. She had met them during the taping of Celebrity Apprentice. You know, I was on the cast of Celebrity Apprentice in Mr. Trump's last season on the program. She told me, Melania did, how excited she was about her husband's extraordinary success at the polling booth and his election, obviously, to the presidency. Mr. Trump himself was relaxed. He was confident. He was sharing his sincere excitement at the prospect of living in the White House, belying the notion that he'd consider it slumming after the luxury of his Trump Tower digs. And you should see that apartment that they have. It's a full floor on the 66th floor of that tower. Not to mention his winter palace in Florida, Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach. But he really was excited about the White House. They both were. He called it majestic. So the next day I posted on Facebook. I said, great spending time with President-elect yesterday afternoon. He started by joking that I look better without the beard. But then he went right into a serious discussion about how he is getting the American taxpayer a break on the F-35 fighter jet. The First Lady-elect Melania was also there. She could not have been more gracious. She remembered my wife Erica's name, invited us to the White House, which I thought was very sweet of her. Mr. Trump and I joked about Celebrity Apprentice. He said how he pointed out very sharply how Arnold Schwarzenegger is not doing nearly as well as he did. In fact, he went so far, the president-elect now, with the whole weight of the civilized world and world peace on his shoulders, to dig out the ratings of his debut at Celebrity Apprentice and showed me that he was number one, and one season both number one and number two. He was in a very good mood. He was looking forward to his inauguration, and he was bemused by the calls for his tenure as the 45th president of the United States to be labeled illegitimate. That, of course, is bogus. Donald Trump is our president, our one and only president, and on January 20th, after his inauguration, he'll be the 45th person in the history of the Republic to have that honor as chief executive of the mightiest nation on earth, and we wish him well. That's what I posted on Facebook. Funny story, backstory, Fox News co-president Bill Shine, he's the new boss around here along with Jack Abernethy. But Bill Shine, as I told him, I was going over last Thursday to say hi to Donald Trump, asked me to get the president-elect's signature on an internal Fox News Election Day projection. The document, which just distributed internally, remember, published around 5 p.m. on that historic Tuesday, the 8th of November, the document spoke of how our polls, our Fox News polls, like everybody else's polls just about, were forecasting an almost certain Hillary Clinton victory, which our Fox News experts forecast we would be able to call for the Democrat at around 11 p.m. Eastern time. So I asked him to autograph that to Bill Shine. So he sat behind his desk in the transition office. President-elect Trump then autographed the document with his customary black marker, writing in that unmistakable handwriting of his, kind of a cross between block letters and cursive. And he wrote on the document that predicted Hillary Clinton's certain victory and our ability to call it for the Democrat at 11 p.m. Eastern time, he wrote, quote, "It didn't turn out that way. Love, Donald." It certainly didn't turn out that way, although many people in the United States and all around the world are still in shock. Donald Trump is the president of the United States, the 45th president of the United States. And I, for one, am all for giving him a chance. Give Trump a chance. Give him a chance to be a great president, because if he's a great president, then that helps all of us. You know, let's put aside all of the obvious differences we have with the positions that he's staked out during the campaign. And in that regard, let me just say that many people ask me, people who have known me and followed me throughout the decades I've been on the air, 47 years and counting so far, how I can possibly support a person whose ideas, at least whose announced ideas, are so very different than my own. I mean, his positions, I mean, start with Megyn Kelly and how he attacked Megyn, who was at the time my colleague at Fox News. More profoundly, how he attacked Mexican immigrants, saying they were drug dealers and rapists and people coming to sow discord and crime here in the United States. How he talked about Muslims and barring Muslims from the country. His position generally on immigration. I've been a champion of immigration reform. I've written two books on it, His Panic and The Great Progression. So I obviously disagree with him, his hard notes, his harsh tone on immigration, the wall, that wall. I mean, forget about that wall. That wall will cost tens of billions of dollars. Are we willing to spend vital infrastructure dollars on building that wall? You know, the answer might be yes, we are. I mean, Donald Trump won the election. The election has some consequences. Those folks who voted for him, the overwhelmingly white working class voters who flocked to him in record numbers, they want the wall built, whether or not it works. You know, I think it'll keep out Juan and Maria, the apricot pickers, but it won't keep out El Chapo and his boys. Well, El Chapo's another story. I'll tell you about that someday. The other thing about Donald Trump is, well, the real thing is, the bottom line is, I do not take him literally. Remember, I have known him since 1976. So I've known him for literally 40 plus years. And I do not believe that he is the person that he has portrayed himself to be to get elected president. I may be wrong about that, but I, for instance, do not believe in my heart of hearts that Donald Trump will ever, for example, muster a deportation force to go after undocumented immigrants, to round them up, to expel them from the country. And I think the litmus test, and President Obama in his final press conference touched on it, will be how he treats the so-called Dream Act students. Will he, by executive order, as he has the constitutional right to do, will he revoke their deferred deportation status? He can, with a stroke of a pen, undo the executive order that Barack Obama signed, to his credit, back in 2014. He can, if he wants to, deport people who came here as young children, students, many of them still, who have never committed any crime, who really had no experience in their native lands. They were brought here as young children through no fault of their own. And again, a requirement would be that they've committed no crime here, that they are law-abiding, useful citizens. They've now been given deferred deportation, deferred status. If he undoes that, then all bets are off, then I will oppose him. But I do not believe that that will happen. That's not the person that I have known for this long. He's talked to me many, many times about running for president, Donald Trump has. Many, many times. In the early days, I assumed he would be a middle-of-the-road Democrat when he ran. I was shocked when, I found out he was a Republican, not only a Republican, but a conservative Republican at that. But in my personal relationship with him, I think that he really has, and you remember this came up when he was up against Ted Cruz in the New York primary. He has New York values. And New York, remember, is the largest sanctuary city in this country. We have approximately 500,000 undocumented immigrants from Mexico alone in the five boroughs. Without them, the city would cease to function. You'd never get a pizza delivered at 2 a.m. in a cold February. Never happen. The babysitters, the lawn tenders, you know, the people who work in other parts of the country in the poultry processing plants, the meat packing plants, all those horrifying, horrible jobs that Americans just won't take anymore. Who's going to pick the fruit if we deport all the undocumented? But I don't want to stray off that. I want to say, bottom line is, I have a personal relationship with this man. And the man I know is a good man. And he's been a good friend, and he's been very loyal to me. For instance, Barack Obama. I'm much more in sync with President Obama, or ex-President Obama, former President Obama, POTUS 44, than I am with Donald Trump. I mean, Barack Obama's done some great things. I mean, some things that are pretty mediocre, but he did some pretty good things with the economy. And I like his style, his philosophy, the way he speaks. I like his sentimentality. I like his compassion, all of it. But he's been a snob to me also. You know, he's been one of these kind of prep school holier than thou, no more than you know. I remember one time I was at a birthday party for Alan Dershowitz at his home in Martha's Vineyard. President Obama and the First Lady were staying right next door. You could see the Secret Service guys right next door, like 200 feet from where we were at the Dershowitz birthday party. And later Alan told me, Professor Dershowitz told me, that President Obama did not come over because he heard I was there and he didn't want to go to a party with a Fox News correspondent. So screw him. I mean, I don't mean that literally. You know what I mean? I have nothing but respect for President Obama. It's just that he's not my hangout buddy. I can hang out with Donald Trump much more easily. He's down to earth. I mean, the experience with Celebrity Apprentice was a total positive experience for me and my family. You know, as the runner-up on his final season of Celebrity Apprentice in 2015, just before he announced for the presidency, and it was clear that he was heading in that direction. He was so gracious. When I lost, first of all, he didn't say I was fired. He said to Lisa Gibbons, who eventually won, that she was hired. So he didn't want to say I was fired because he thought it was too harsh given the circumstance. And I think he really wanted me to win. But my daughter Sol, my whole family was there, but my daughter Sol, who was 10 years old at the time, started sobbing when I lost, as children will do when their parents, you know, are disappointed in some way. He stopped the world to speak with Sol, our then 10-year-old. He allowed her to sit in his big red leather chair, the boss chair he wears at the apprentice table. He made her boss for a couple of minutes there. He was very gentle in the way he spoke, very soothing, very grandfatherly, and I will never forget it. It was really, it's those kinds of personal things that I remember and that are important to me. That's why I call him proudly my friend, the 45th president of the United States, which is pretty cool also to have a friend who's in the White House. And he likes the idea of the White House. You know, I mentioned that, you know, despite the fact that he told me on the air, and I've interviewed him, you know, 25 times, told me on the air back in the 90s that Mar-a-Lago, this is back in the early 90s when he first got it and fought through the zoning to get the place built and then admitted Jews and African-Americans and Latinos to the party, much to the chagrin of the old line guys. But he told me Mar-a-Lago is the best residence on earth, despite that fact. And, you know, like I said, that the fear that he would be slumming, people would consider or fear that he would be slumming in the White House. He's very, very excited about moving into the White House. And he's invited Erica, my wife, my beautiful wife, and I. And there's something else I just want to confess to you, and this is the my final thought for today. Donald Trump and I are also of a kind of a disappearing generation. You know, he's 70 years old. I'm 73 years old. You know, we come from a long ago time where values were very different than they are now, and I think that much of what he said and done, at least style-wise, is really a function of the fact that he is a product of his generation, as am I. I mean, we got over it eventually. But, you know, it takes time for people to evolve, and it certainly took him, you know, time to evolve. And that's why I wasn't as hard on the candidate, Donald Trump, as his noxious statements on women and people with disabilities, Muslims and Mexicans probably required. I identify with him. I identify with him in terms of our social evolution. Regardless of our ups and downs and the obvious disparities in his wealth and notoriety and mine, we are, or more correctly, and this is the important part, we were products of our time and our circumstance. We grew to manhood in that chauvinistic promiscuity, that nativist, clumsy, closed-mindedness of the locker rooms of metropolitan New York in the late 1950s, the early 1960s. And I'm talking about the days before JFK was killed, the days before civil rights, the days before the Vietnam War. You hear the sirens, a busy New York day here. Before the women's movement changed all the rules. I mean, we admired women like Marilyn Monroe, Kim Novak, Jane Mansfield, Jane Russell. Those were our cool cats meow. I mean, we read Playboy magazine, Esquire magazine, me in my case when I could afford it. They were the sexy style Bibles in our day. Women were to be admired, enjoyed, looks mattered more than brains or even money. No one spoke of gender equality in sports in those days, in academia or in professional life. It was real-life madmen, cheerleaders or centerfolds were the ideal. Trading in your partner when her warranty expired was routine. Divorce was not as common as infidelity was, unless the protagonist was wealthy and irreligious, which for decades we both were. He and I navigated some hard social storms of our own making. We figured out the grossness of a piggy approach to life back in the day. At about the same phase in our life, too, you know, in our 50s, early 60s. In my case, shame mingles with the pride of achievement. I'm like Frank Sinatra. I write about it in my upcoming memoir, Geraldo of Arabia. I'm like Frank Sinatra, you know, that song Regrets, I Have a Few. I think self-doubt is unproductive, but circumspection is not. And thankfully, nobody was hurt by my narcissism back in the day. I found my beautiful wife, Erica. Deep in life, I found humility and respect for family and fidelity. Everybody in my life, including my ex-partners, is doing reasonably well. In Donald Trump's life, much more importantly, his tabloid lifestyle was shed. And all's well that ends well. Donald Trump found Melania Trump around 2005. He forged an extraordinary relationship with her and an extraordinary historic path to the highest office in the land. And we'll end this where we began it by wishing him well. Godspeed, POTUS 45. We'll be betting on you and rooting for you. Thanks for listening, folks. I'm Geraldo Rivera.